Welcome to the Fargo Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Fargo on FX. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 8, titled Who Rules the Land of Denial? Who do you think it is?
Mr. Wrench.
Is it DJ Qualls? Does he rule the land of denial? No. I think it's Emmett. Emmett rules the land of denial.
Emmett?
Yeah.
Because he's in denial?
He's in denial about having won the war, having won his life in the war.
Huh. Interesting.
I don't know.
Maybe the guy who held out and fought World War II for 30 years.
He definitely rules
Hiru
land of denial.
Onada.
Like, he built the land of denial.
Yeah. So what did you think of this episode?
Man, I'm having a real hard time deciding because I definitely was not engaged with it for the first, like, half. Basically,
really?
Until we went to Gloria.
Wow. I thought that was the best part.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know if I just wasn't in the right state to watch it at that point, because I didn't dislike the beginning. Uh-huh. It's just I watched the thing twice, and still the second time it just kind of like was there as opposed to really hitting me. The second half I like a lot.
I think this episode was amazing, and I know that surprised a lot of people because I got a lot of feedback with people being nervous that I would not like the supernatural introduction into Fargo, and honestly
okay.
There's a couple things I want to say about that. Number one, after two seasons of Fargo pulling this crap, I said that I was consciously kind of like trying to open myself to like, this is a thing that Fargo does. This is a part of the Coen brothers universe that they're trying to play homage to. And I have since watched a lot more Coen brothers films. Like, I plugged, I think, all of the holes. Like, I don't think there's a single Coen brothers film that I have not seen yet. So this seems like it borrows a lot from The Big Lebowski, but also borrows a lot from A Serious Man that introduces a lot of concepts of Jewish mythology and the concept of spirits that can attach, spirits of the dead that can attach to living people and only be freed if they accomplish a particular mission. And also here's the other difference, I guess, because I've described myself as a lore whore, that I love like when something like Game of Thrones is full of it, where you'll hear about a house or a particular sword mentioned, and you can dig on that thing and just like fall down a Wikipedia hole and just spend hours finding more information. It's just like it's a never ending thing. And unlike the Fishnado, which you just have to accept or not, unlike the UFO, which is just an unexplainable phenomenon and you can't, there's no more. This Jewish mysticism, I just kept on going down and down and down. And like all the stuff that Roy Wise was saying and the fact that he's quoting prophecies from Obadiah, and the Obadiah was a book of judgment written against a tribe of Esau, which is the older brother of Jacob. Now we've got potentially Nikki delivering these words of judgment to Emmett. I felt like there was something that as I tugged on it, it got more and more rewarding the more I read on it. And whereas the previous seasons, they just felt like a matter of fact, well, this is something crazy that's happened and you swallow it. And I don't want to fight with people who liked it because.
And I'm not even certain that this moment is meant to be that moment for this season of Fargo. You know, there may be something a little more like the UFO.
There might be something.
There
might be
up.
Something. I mean, clearly Ray Wise's character, who is an allusion to the mythological wandering Jew. Mm-hmm. Did you see any of this stuff?
I kind of skimmed Reddit for some stuff because I knew that there was more to dig on, but I also figured you were probably going to do a lot of digging on it. And I wanted to kind of have a little bit of a perspective to sit back and say, okay, well, what do I need to know about this to understand what they're getting at? Because I know basically nothing about it.
And that's
it.
The thing. Like, I think you can treat this as a Fishnado or a UFO and just shrug your shoulders and say, like, okay, well, this is just this is just a weird thing, and maybe it'll all be illuminated in the fullness of time. Because I think we're supposed to understand that this bowling alley is like a purgatory, Jewish concept of purgatory. Yeah. That
it's essentially like waiting at the pearly gates, right?
Yeah.
Like for your judgment.
Yeah.
And is it Peter at the gate?
It's an analogy. It's like it wouldn't be pretty. It'd be Gehenna, is what they call it in Jewish tradition.
Okay,
but I don't know. I felt like that depth where you didn't have to, but if you went searching for it, it was there, and maybe there's some clues about what they're trying to allude to, and I don't know. I get, and also I'm just a little bit more open to mysticism and supernatural things in Fargo because I am trying to appreciate that Fargo is a celebration of all the Coen brothers' works, and you'd be an ignorant ass if you said that none of that stuff is in their works. Like, you can say, like, well, you know, there's no supernatural thing in No Country for Old Men. You might be right, but, like, there's a lot of that stuff in their works. Mm-hmm. And even if it doesn't pay off, there's a lot of illusions and things in the periphery that is spooky, and the things, you know, like all kinds of theories and stuff. And so, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I felt like the scene of Mr. Wrench taking on these guys in defense of Nikki was just like an amazing, like, cheering moment.
I just couldn't get past the fact that we know these guys have guns. Why don't they use them?
That's so, like, okay.
I got stuck in the logistics of the thing and couldn't appreciate just the beauty of it, because you're right, it was beautiful.
I'm trying to think, because that's the one problem where you just have to not worry about it, because in a world where they're going to engineer a massive bus wreck that would be so fucking loud and disruptive, the idea that they don't have any guns at all.
They do. They fire guns. They kill the cop. The cop's got a gun. Like,
wait,
pick up that gun. Yeah.
Well, okay,
reaching, he's fumbling for his gun, and they kill him, and two shots go off. And
well, right, but for whatever reason, they're not using guns.
Right.
And they didn't bring guns.
But there's no reason not to, and that's the thing. I don't understand.
I mean, I was trying to think, like, well, maybe they wanted to look like it's an escape, but, like, no, they're
song. They built a fucking ramp
for and they
this
left
bus.
It there. So, you got me there, and I can't explain why I like this and just completely accepted all that shit.
Oh, I think you're right, though. It is gorgeous to look at, and that scene of Wrench doing his thing is phenomenal.
Yeah, when he, like, stands up and just punches that pig in the face, and they kind of have that, like, swell of music. That's like a real, like, fist, like a, you know, and then they just. Like, there's the passion of the Wrench, too. He takes an arrow, and he gets stabbed in the back, and then Nikki gets shot at the crossbow, and he throws a desperation hatchet, and he takes off the dude's ear. Like, that stuff's all cool and just believable enough, especially if you add the idea of divine providence to it.
Right.
Like, that this is, like, some kind of protected mission by God, and that there somebody's looking out after And that also doesn't quite make sense, because Wrench and Nikki are not innocent babes in the woods.
Sure, yeah.
Like, Nikki murdered a dude, and if my theory is right that this guy didn't even kill Stussy, his only crime is being manipulated by Ray and being a pinhead.
Yeah.
Why she is single, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's something even biblical in that. Like, the Apostle Paul was named Saul before that, and he was one of the leading persecutors of the apostles and disciples of Jesus. Like, he bragged about how many that he delivered unto death and how many he persecuted. And then he got struck on the road to Damascus, and he became the Apostle Paul. So,
yeah,
there's precedence for all that in mythology. So I liked it, and I thought it was exciting. And then the second half was absorbing, and I liked the fact that Emmett is trying to turn the tables. Mm-hmm. And I feel like... There's a read on the Fargate 5 thread on Reddit, also known as Fargo TV, that someone speculated that Varga miscalculated by taking out Sai, because that's the last thing that Emmett cared about. Mm-hmm. And now it's just him and his own life, which he doesn't even value at this point. And Vargas, and so it's like, by taking that last thing he cared about and taking it off the board and putting him in a coma. And I thought it was telling that Ray decides to fake, you know, taking a medic, not Ray, sorry, Emmett, decides to fake taking a medication when Vargas, like, you know, and Sai's dead. And he's like, what? Or in a coma. And Vargas, like, whatever. Like, he just realizes that, like, it's now or never.
Yeah.
And he summons up a little act of courage to rebel against Mimo and Varga. And
I feel like,
what'll happen now?
You know, Varga's plan. So I think, maybe he shouldn't have eliminated Sai after all that's gone down. But there was also the monkey wrench thrown in of Ray and Nikki eliminating the family as some collateral, you know, some leverage for Varga, because I don't feel like Varga would have, you know, taken Emmett's family out of the picture. Mm-hmm. He would have used that as a tool to control Emmett if he could. But then, yeah, he does go and take the final straw, which is Sai. Mm-hmm. So I do feel like, you know, Nikki has been a thorn in the side of Varga as much as a thorn in the side of Emmett the whole time. Kind of wrecking both of their plans. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, the guy in the bowling alley, whoever you think that is, said as much.
Okay. Hey, before we get into further into the episode, I want to talk about some stuff that's going on at baldmove.com this week. First of all, if you do nothing else to support us, we've got a survey, an audience survey right now that you can participate in at fargo.baldmove.com. It takes just a couple of minutes to complete. It's completely anonymous. We don't even take your email address. There's no way we can hassle you about it. It just asks us how we are doing in our various shows and how we are satisfying you as an audience member, and collect some anonymous demographics data to help us sell advertising in the future. So if you could help us out, go to fargo.baldmove.com. The link's also in the show notes. If you want to click on it through that, that would really help us out, and I'd appreciate it. Secondly, of course, we've already got the final coverage of The Leftovers. We've got Better Call Saul out this week. Now you got Fargo. Who won the week? That's coming up on Bald Move TV, where Jim and I debate which of those three series had the best outing, and it's going to be a tough one this week. We've had a great run of first-run Bald Movies. We did a spoiler-filled edition of Wonder Woman, which was awesome. We saw The Mummy last night, which... better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen.
If you can, my voice is going up 3 octaves, so it's a little skip, but it's better. You can get the spoiler-free edition for free, or if you're a club member, you can get the full meal deal. Our commission podcast of the week was The Fugitive. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go relive some 90s mid-budget thriller fun, check that out. It's free on baldmove.com as well. But yeah, check it out. So let's start talking about, I guess, a focused way. Do you, because the one thing I really want to talk about, I kind of want to jump to the end here and talk about
the confession, the decision to confess.
Yeah, like the fact that they do this time jump where Ray's, and they, I guess that's the other. Let's start there with Ray getting poisoned, because that's the other thing. There's two things in this episode that I felt like were awfully big contrivances. Didn't ruin the episode for me, but if it does, I don't blame you. The fact that they didn't use guns in the beginning, because none of this would have happened if anybody had a pistol.
DJ Qual's head just kind of sitting there for a while.
Well, that I want to talk about that here in a minute, because did you notice that DJ Qual's was credited as the Golem?
Oh, no.
The golem, rather, which is another. Do you know the Jewish mythology around that? That's a...
I know the term, but I don't know what it means.
That's a being that was made out of clay and then animated through Jewish mysticism, which that whole teaching, I think, is called Kabbalah, if you take it all, like the Jewish mysticism. Okay. That it's a being made out of mud or clay that can be animated to do a mission. So I think that's an intention, like, because I don't think it's possible to behead someone with two people pulling on a chain.
And if it is, it rips right off.
Right.
but if it's like
think about how, like, have you ever seen a person that, like, they throw the clay on the wheel and they spin it and they make a vase, and the last step is they always take like a piece of twine or wire and they slice through the bottom and it makes a nice clean cut. And then they lift it off. I feel like it's supposed to be an analogy towards this guy being, like, literally conjured out of malevolence.
Yeah.
It's all supernatural bullshit, but, like, at least it kind of tracks clean with what I think they're doing there.
Yeah.
The second contrivance, why the fuck does Sai accept a cup of tea from Varga without any protest at all?
I mean, I don't think he has a choice.
Like, no, but... He just willingly accepts it, and that felt like so far out of character. Now I get the Sai's been beaten down.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like Sai to me,
and that's what I'm rolling with. Like, this is not the guy who goes in and resists drinking out of the dick cup. This is the guy who's cried in front of his wife and who no longer sees himself as fully a man. And but it's still like, it's awfully convenient for Varga that he just unquestioningly drinks that tea.
Same thing. If he doesn't, he's dead in that scene.
Probably.
I think they just kill him.
But I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, like, what was true to the character, and I'm just not sure.
Well, I mean, Yeah. Okay. So I don't know where I fall on this, but if I'm going to play like the other side, I would say here's a man who has been through the cup thing once and tried to refuse a drink. That didn't work out for him. He could do it again, or he could just accept his fate in that moment.
Right.
I don't know.
But there was no, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there was no, like, I'm doing this, but against my better judgment. There's no, like, I'm doing this under protest. There's no, like, it was just a matter of fact. Here, drink a cup of
tea. Yeah, I think he should have said no to the tea. Like, when he asks him, how about a cup of tea, then he should have said no.
Yeah.
And they should have brought it for him anyway, just like they did the dick
cup. Yeah. And then that would seem like it's a, you know, kind of a repeating rhyme in this song of the season instead of, like, just a character. But, like, again, it's not super important.
Yeah.
But he goes into the office and throws up, and he's got chunks of stuff in his mouth. And, like, I
pretty
swear
hilarious.
To this show is trying to get me to hate it because I hate throwing up. I hate thinking about it. And they just keep shoving it down my throat or shoving it out my throat, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, that's not right. Falls, hits his head, goes into a coma, and then we time jump 3 months. We're now on March 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Which, do you know the significance of March 15th, the Ides of March?
No.
That's the day that Julius Caesar was betrayed by his friends. And his wife had a – I think it's his wife. Maybe I'm getting him and Pontius Pilate confused. But that this was – he says, hey, you got to, you know, beware the Ides of March. So we see that this day when Emmett's in the hospital looking at him and now, you know, size bristled out into a beard. Did you have a problem with, like, the time jump?
No.
Huh. Because I...
No, not at all.
I didn't have a problem with it, but I was briefly disappointed that we weren't going to see any kind of epic battle between Gloria and... Because I thought this was all going to resolve around Christmas time.
Right. Yeah, it seems like it's still coming. You know, she's going to, like... What is she going to do against Varga, right? That's
right.
The big question now.
Yeah. The woman who can't be located by any kind of digital means versus the guy
doesn't
who...
have a Facebook. Although, I wonder if there are more computers in the office now. I wonder if she's got some kind of trace.
That's true. That's very true. I also like the touch of Winnie and Gloria fighting their two-woman front on the Stussy War. Like, they're using their... like they
just coming to the hospital for...
Yeah.
Quote,
they're
unquote,
on their
lunch.
Oh no, we're just here for shepherd's pie, and who knew that you were going to be,
you're
going to be there? And I wonder what Mo thinks about that.
Right. Yeah.
Because Stussy's like, I've complained to your
off
superiors, and you know, doing all this, and they just dogged pursuit of this guy.
Yeah, we did speculate that Mo would not keep her on after this case, after the week where, you know, she was still chief. Apparently he did.
Now, they are stuffed into the supply closet. So
yeah.
It looks, and she's on shit detail. She's serving people eviction notices, and that seems like it's kind of, you know, soul-crushing. But I don't know. I was a little disappointed to leave the Christmas season in Fargo. Although, my God, a lot of these Christmas songs have been going to be ruined for me. Like, Deck the Halls? These poor couple get massacred just because they drove down the wrong... Although, here's another question. Why the hell did they not flip a 360 in the air?
Oh, with the ramp?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a damn fine question.
You know, it's like, oh my God, Ma, there's a pipe in the road. Well, you better steer around it, Herb.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, I feel like that they would have just come down barreling down and ran into it.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
It would have been kind of funny if you'd have seen like this yellow minivan corkscrewing through the air of fa-la-la-la-la and bodies going everywhere like that. That would have been just as funny and just as horrific on the next day. But yeah. The time jump.
Mm-hmm.
Who is fucking with Emmett? I have my idea. I want to see what you think.
This is interesting. So I was wondering if it isn't, in fact, that like Nikki and Wrench are some kind of ghost, like literal ghost.
Could be.
Like they no longer have a physical presence, but they're able to influence the physical surroundings.
They're on a mission from God.
Right. Because we have a lot of faith in Mimo's competency, I suppose.
Yes.
Even though he's a guy who perpetually has earphones in and is dancing around like a fool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that it would just be a very simple matter to sneak in past him and put a mustache on Emmett while he's passed out, which was maybe the best part of this episode for me.
Especially when he sees it reflected out of like he's like pissing in Darth Vader's face is what it felt like with that toilet.
It's very dark.
But yeah, the scene reflection in the pee-stained water was kind of funny and also harkens back to the third episode from when the Anastasi, saw his reflection in the toilet. And do you?
So I think it's Nikki.
Because when I first saw it, I thought what they're getting at was the Emmett's losing his mind and he's having a psychotic break where he's doing like season one Kevin from The Leftovers. And
he's putting that stuff up inadvertently.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and then forgetting about it. And then he passes out and he wakes up. And
also possible, I think, yeah.
But I think now that I've done a little research into what they're getting at the bowling alley, I think you're right. I think that there is potential supernatural avenging angels of Nikki that's doing this, because she it seems like it's hard to get into one without getting in the other.
For sure.
So the other thing I want to talk about before we rewind and go back to the beginning is they talk about Yuri as being a participant in a massacre that happened 250 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This Jewish settlement by the Cossacks, and how he was part of there. And they also in the A Serious Man, they talk about, and I'm not going to try to pronounce any of these Jewish terms because I'll just butcher them, but this concept of a ghost, a soul that can't leave the earth because they're troubled or they're cursed, and they attach to different living bodies, and implying that kind of. That Yuri is, and they also mention him, like he's murdering this Helga character in East Germany. That's how we start up this.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe that this is a spirit that's possessed of various a different type of person and becomes this Yuri character over and over and over again until he finally meets his divine judgment and end.
Could be.
My question is, are we supposed to understand that this hero Onada might have possessed Mimo? Is that the connect? Because you've got Yuri and you've got this Japanese looking guy, and they mentioned this guy that fought in World War II and never stopped the battle. Now, I did some research into him. He's a real life guy. He didn't die until 2014.
Okay.
But, and they also talk about the Ray comes back as a kitten. So, like, I'm not sure if, like, when a vengeful spirit possesses you, did they do it at birth, or is it something like, you know, a guy's just a regular dude, and then this vengeful spirit latches onto you and commandeers your body. I'm not sure, but I thought it was an interesting parallel.
Well, I thought that story, I mean, it's being told to Emmett by Varga, and I think, like, the story of the Japanese man on the island applies to Emmett.
Because he's needlessly fighting a war he's already won and torn. Like, this guy lived up in the mountains for 30 years.
He's the last one fighting.
And he's taken all this risk and all this deprivation and wasting his life for something that's already been fought and won.
Yeah.
Or fought and lost. That's the other thing is, like, Hiro Onada is not a guy who was fighting a war he already won. He was fighting a war that's already been lost.
I mean, it's weird because Emmett is both, right? He's won a war in that he now has this, like, super successful company and he's rich and, like, they're doing better than ever financially. But, like, he's lost the war in that his company is now run by this evil presence and he's lost his family and his friends. Like,
it's a zombie company. It's no longer animated by his own will.
Yeah, he's both won and lost, I would
say. He's lost everything. The things that were important to him, family, friends, respect of his peers, he has lost in this pursuit.
Yep.
So okay. I'm kinda with you, but I saw that theory floating around on Farget V and I wanted to talk about it. So do we wanna talk just about the awesomeness of Wrench taking on these guys? Do we wanna just talk about because that is what it is. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's there. That's just on full display.
Yeah.
Wrench is awesome. Wrench has always been a badass.
I thought Nikki was kind of ungrateful when she was complaining about, oh, God, I'm chained to a deaf guy. Well, if you were chained to some dumbass, you wouldn't have made it out of that bus.
That's true.
You thank God you're chained to this particular deaf guy.
The breaker of chains. Like, you got to take that title from Daenerys and give it to Wrench because
that's
twice.
Yeah, shit, yeah. And that's the first time I watched it, I'm like, did they establish in season one that he was, like, superhumanly strong? But in subsequent watches, they were always careful that he was doing that to already damaged chains. Like, this one had been through a bus wreck, and then he had whacked it with an axe a couple times.
But there's no weld on that link, on that ring.
Well, I mean, I think that you're supposed to understand that, like, it probably was spot welded, but, like, during the impact that, you know, him and Nikki's bodies put against, like, that it might have just wrenched it a little bit open and broke the weld.
I didn't see any welds, but
okay. And then the other chain was just cut, so yeah. And he just had to force it open, which is still pretty damn strong, but mm-hmm. I guess believable.
And it was both of them. They were both putting their weight into it, so yeah. I think you could probably do it.
Yeah. But yeah, I just thought, like, okay, whatever. It is, this stuff is all pretty awesome. We already talked about the golem part. I thought it was really funny that I thought Yuri's was going to get shot by that kid's dad, the dad's kid. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, because when he got shot in the head, I'm like, oh, that's a fatal wound. But then, like, nah, it hit him in the wolf pie. Like, it didn't look like it was going into his head at all.
No, it hit him in the wolf hat.
But it's such a funny coincidence. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the bowling alley.
Okay.
Go to the bowling alley, and Ray Wise sidles up to Nikki here, in very much the same way the cowboy sidles up to the dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a definite Fargo, or not Fargo, definite
Big Lebowski
reference. And they talk about life being suffering, and he gives him this kitten that she says his name is Ray, and he talks about the teachings of Rabbi Nachman, who is this rabbi that lived a couple hundred years ago. He was born a couple years after the American Revolution, so this is 250 years ago. And he was famous because he took this Jewish mysticism, the Kabbalah, where they talk about, you know, golems and spirits and all the, like, extracurricular, not in the, you know, Old Testament kind of thing. And he was, like, had this rigorous Jewish scholarship. So he tried to meld this, like, this history of Jewish mysticism with, like, you know, back to the original text and explain it and how it's like a unified system. And again, this is just me doing 3 hours of research and reading a lot of Wikipedia articles, so I'm not claiming to be a Jewish scholar.
Right.
But there's a lot of he spouts a lot of Jewish stuff, for example. When he says the first, like, Jewish thing he says, well, first Jewish thing he says is Yiddish for troubles, like, you have troubles.
Hmm. Okay.
The second thing he says is he quotes from Psalms 94 and says, "O Lord, avenging God, show thyself avenging God." Then what was the other thing he says? Oh, the third thing he says is he quotes from Obadiah chapter 1, verse 1. Obadiah actually only has one verse, or one chapter. It's the shortest book in the Hebrew Bible. Hmm. But he quotes it in English. But this book of Obadiah is a prophecy, as I mentioned, against the nation of Edom. Nation of Edom is like the anti-Israelites. Like, Edom was given birth, like, the father of Edomites is Esau, Jacob's brother. The Israelites are all spawned from Jacob, who later was renamed Israel. And apparently, during the troubles of the Jewish people, when they were, like, Jerusalem was destroyed and they were taken into bondage, the Edomites were doing insults to them. And God was sent Obadiah, who himself was an Edomite, to prophesy a vengeance upon them. And it does seem like, and then after Nikki says, "Do me a favor, when the Gophers play, put a little beer in a bowl and put little Ray in front of the game," he says, lech lecha, which translates into "go forth," which is what God told to Abram in Genesis 12 when he said, "Go take the promised land."
Okay.
So it's the idea of, like, she has received a divine commission and she is to go forth and fulfill it.
Sure.
So, again, we talked about how the two brothers are very similar to the Bible story of Esau and Jacob. In fact, Varga himself has made that connection. It seems like Nikki's role now is to give this divine judgment against Emmett.
And that's the thing. Like, you don't need to understand any of these words.
Right.
Because he says them in, if not plain English, then a little bit of allegory here or right. whatever. I don't know. None of that surprises me, mm-hmm. I guess. It almost seems redundant. Like, why is this guy still speaking in this other language that she doesn't understand when he's also saying the same thing in English?
Well, because I think it's there if, like, if you want to, you know, look into the book of Obadiah and you want to look against into this, you know, this Hebrew guy, and that opens up the world of evil spirits and golems, and then
sure.
a lot of the episode that is otherwise kind of head scratching starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it. You can just be like, oh, it's Fargo being Fargo. But there's, I guess that's why I like it more than the Fishnado and the UFO, is that there's a lot of there, it seems like.
Sure.
So, but yeah. The other thing is, you know, Yuri comes and he seems like, Yuri's gone now, because we don't see him in the flash forward. It's just Varga and Mimo. It seems like this.
He's dead. Yeah.
Vengeful spirit was judged
and
by God.
I actually didn't need to see the scene with Yuri inside the bowling alley. I thought they could have simply left it at Yuri looking at the bowling alley and walking toward it.
But it adds a lot to that mystical flavor, like the fact that he was judged by these condemned souls. Because that's the other thing about this rabbi, Nachman, is he believed, like, you know, they talked about these Jews that were slaughtered in Uman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they mentioned this in an episode, but it's a fact that he, Rabbi Nachman, wanted to be buried. No, they do mention that, the fact that his soul would bind and give
him garden,
peace. And
yep.
he encourages his followers to... during the Jewish New Year, to always return to his grave and kind of have a communion. I guess like 20,000-30,000 male Jews descend upon this area in Uman every year and have this kind of like wake party observation thing. And that he's channeling all these spirits, these quieted spirits of the Jews to judge Yuri at this moment and kill him, I guess. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool. It was like a mysticism mm-hmm. that kind of all tracks through. And everything there in the episode has a nice underpinning and that ties it to it.
Yeah, I wonder. So for the people who I guess don't, I guess you kind of have to understand that this is not literally actually happening to these people.
But
like
isn't
Nikki,
it?
Well, not in the real world, like the quote unquote real world. I don't think this is actually a bowling alley. I don't think this is actually like a physical place on Earth. I think this is something else, and if you don't get that,
mm-hmm.
I don't know where you go from here in Fargo. Like,
well, so let's because I want to talk about that, because I had a similar thought that like, well, this is very The Leftovers, and this is some kind of weird purgatory place. And I think that you're kind of right, but I also think that
I almost think it's without a doubt.
Well, but I think they go into a real bowling alley. That then becomes this.
I didn't think so. When they look over, when they see this light coming from the hill,
yeah,
I think it has an otherworldly presence to
it. I think so too, but also this is the Midwest, and like bowling alleys can be in the middle of cornfields, and you know, it's like it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They leave in a green Volkswagen,
yeah.
which he says is ironic because,
of course,
you know,
yeah.
because it's all that's Hitler's car.
Uh-huh.
But to me, the way he said, like, you know, my compatriots wanted to keep Mr. Wrench here, but I argued that he's on a better path because he's helping you, and I need you to go and just do his mission to God. I think that while inside the bowling alley, this is some kind of purgatory place, it's also a real place that you can exit and then get in a real Volkswagen and go on your way. Because if they're ghosts, like the green Volkswagen... Like, Yuri sees that, or we see that pull off before Yuri gets to the bowling alley, unless the parking lot's part of the purgatory and the green Volkswagen's part of the purgatory.
Oh, I think it is. I think it's all – I think none of it's actually there.
Huh.
I think this is – I think Nikki's dead.
I mean, Ray Wise is – he says as much where she goes, have you been here before? And she goes, the bowling alley? And he's like, oh, is that what you see? So, like
– Right.
I mean, also, Nikki's wound's not mortal.
Not
at all.
It's not, but there's a lot of blood in that snow, and they're in the middle of nowhere.
Well, they did decapitate that guy.
Well, I mean, even under her body, like, she's got a lot of blood there, too.
Yeah.
And I think the language later in the episode is, like, with this questioning, oh, you were in the house the whole time? How did they put a mustache on him? Like, all of this stuff is adding up to me to be very, very non-physical.
That's the thing I think is compelling about it. That
ghostly.
Nikki, although the other thing is like if God is deliberate is truly on her side, then she could do supernatural things without herself being supernatural. I mean, Moses part of the Red Sea. That doesn't mean he's a demigod.
Sure,
it just means God granted him the power to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm operating right now under the assumption that Nikki and Wrench and Yuri are all dead. Yuri has been eliminated entirely, and Nikki is on some
so the other thing I don't get at is like this. So this myth of the Wandering Jew. Mm-hmm. Do you wear like the whole blood libel thing with like the fact that one of the reasons the Jews have been persecuted over time is that in early Christianity they got the moniker of the killer of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, well, I mean, that's stupid for many, many reasons.
Okay.
But the Wandering Jew apparently was a Jew that insulted Jesus while he was on the cross, and he was doomed to walk the earth for until the second coming. Unfortunately, it seems like that Wandering Jew is part of this whole blood libel slur against the Jews, but he's also quoting all this Jewish tradition and stuff. And I'm like, is that Noah Hawley playing with fusing of the two concepts? Because like I don't think the Wandering Jew would, well, maybe he would. Like if he's a real person, he insulted Christ and now he's walking, he'd still be, I guess, theologically a Jew and have more Jewish tradition. I don't know. That's the
Are
one
you talking
thing
about Ray Weiss's character, Paul Moraine?
Yes.
Because I feel like that's the missing piece of information here. I guess people are saying that is literally that guy's name, right?
Well, there's all kinds of different. Like some people say his name is Malchus and he's like the slave of the high priest that Peter lopped off the ear of during the defense of Jesus and the arrest at the Garden of Gethsemane. He's got like one of his names is like Butchialb or something. Like there's all kinds of different proposed identities for him. This is one of them. It's one of the more modern or later identities of the Wandering Jew.
Okay.
But he himself is not a Jewish tradition, but everything he's speaking is very, very Talmudic Judaism kind of thing. And I'm wondering, like, that's a weird, you know, I don't know. I'm having a hard time putting my finger on why that seems like a big contradiction or a dangerous thing to play with, but yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's kind of all that's kind of all I've got. Now, the other thing I guess is why was Paul Moraine out in Los Angeles protecting Gloria from a creepy cop?
That's a good question. One that I do not have an answer to.
Because you could open that to be like, was like the entire LA trip a purgatory for Gloria to kind of figure her shit out?
Right. Good question. I don't know.
I also want to talk about Gloria being a goddamn saint because her and her husband are not even divorced. They go do Christmas with her and her husband's new boyfriend. And she's like super game. She's wearing the antlers. I want to move for on the Bald Move Christmas tree this year. We've had Daryl Dixon with Angel Wings as the tree topper. We've had the Hound with Angel Wings as the tree topper. I want Carrie Coon with deer antlers as the tree topper for this year.
Can we get an action figure of her? Are there any?
I wasn't even thinking action figure. I was just going to literally get a really nice professionally printed piece of foam board.
Okay.
With her and the antlers and tie it to the top of the tree.
Sure.
Because this feels like the year of the coon.
It is, totally.
She's crushing it in The Leftovers, and she's not doing a bad job in Fargo either.
Yeah.
And we still got two episodes to go. But yeah, I thought I continue to enjoy her performance and her nuance. Someone is going to ask in the email, and I want you to think about this, like what is her arc?
That's what I was going to ask you just now is why show any of that? What does it matter to this story that Gloria is going through this very recent, not even finalized divorce yet, and that her child is, you know, having trouble adjusting to it on Christmas? And I mean, what is the point?
Is it a little bit of like the fact that, like, you know, one of the Jews' historical reps is they are a people without a home? They are wandering, and Gloria is this person who is obviously a good person, and she tries to do what's right, but she doesn't have a place in the world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Her, like, literally, her employment has been consumed, and she's in exile inside this police department. Her husband, like, left her completely in the lurch, and not just, like, you know, I mean, I imagine it must be pretty devastating to be married for someone and father a child and find out that they never were even attracted to you at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's bisect, there's like lots of spectrum. That's probably an overly broad thing to say, but you know, that's gotta be all things that you grapple with. And as a result, she's trying to like forge a family with this the stepfather that she's not really close to. And I just,
man, I wish
that seems like there's something that you could like and have an analogy to this Jewish tradition of like not having a homeland and longing for that return in that promised land, a place of belonging and family that mm-hmm. is kind of thematic with her. And maybe that's what she'll do. She will somehow find a way to get peace and family, and I don't know, kill Mo Damick and take his place as the new chief of police. I don't know what her arc is, but I see a little bit of the sketches of what that could be.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wish there was a better way to kind of reverse engineer what a creator is thinking when they create this art, because. You know, in an electronic system, there are definitely tools and methodologies for doing so. Like in art, it's very different. And the knowledge sets you need to have are so broad and so unpredictable, right?
Like, because it's essentially...
What do I not know that Noah Hawley knows?
Right. He's that a smart guy that reads a lot of literature and takes a lot of pop culture and is interested in religion. You have to just randomly... have degrees in the things that he's personally interested in season to season, and also
and that's why the internet is going crazy about this stuff, right? Because now everybody's exposed to kind of all of that knowledge at once, and you know, that's why you get a lot of insight and good insight into the themes and stuff this show is trying to do. And it's also why you get rampant lunacy in the speculation, is because people who don't know about it are trying to build off a base of knowledge they don't have.
Some dude nailed this whole
included.
Some dude nailed this whole wandering Jew thing. And the first appearance and said and made some pretty accurate predictions of what he thought was going on. But like that seemed like okay, because you never with Fargo, it's frustrating because. You never know what's going to be just an Easter egg or an allusion to something, or you know, like for example, the Ray being a cat is a multi-level Cohen Easter egg, because it's one of the themes of Inside Llewyn Davis is that he is the cat and the cat is him and the cat is his identity that he's struggling to define and achieve in the world and get mastery over, but it's also a stealth reference to my brother, Where Art Thou?
Right.
I can't remember the two dumb fucks' name, but one of them thinks he's got turned into a frog, and he's, you know, like, are you in there? And I don't think that means anything other than just being an Easter egg and, I guess, suggesting about this ensoulment idea that they're playing with. But you don't know what's going to be that and what's going to be the wandering Jew.
Do know that Noah Hawley and the writers of this show were thinking about a very specific thing when they made these choices. And trying to figure out what that thing is exactly
And also, how does this fit in with a Cold War parable that also has applications that's also a reaction to the Trump presidency?
And the quote-unquote selfie culture that this is dealing with?
And like, selfie where does culture? That play in? Yeah, like all these influences that are, like, if you look, like, you can be like, oh, well, this is obvious about the 2016 election and aftermath.
Right.
Okay, but then what the hell is this Cossack Jewish stuff in here?
Yeah.
And the Cold War, and like, oh, this is obviously a parable about the Cold War with the brothers. Okay, but then what about the Jacob and Esau? And then this selfie culture, like, yeah, they've just barely hinted at that. But
yeah, I don't even.
We got two episodes to go. Maybe it'll get blown wide open.
Maybe.
But that's the thing. Like, it's really, you just never know which thread to pull, and it's going to be rewarding, and which is just like, oh yeah, this was funny because it was on a Coen Brothers film at one time,
right?
But I loved it. I thought it was great. And the other thing is, do you think this is the only supernatural twist? Like, is this the UFO moment, or is this just because? In the previous episode, the previous season, there was lots of hints to UFOs.
Yeah, language and writing and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
And then the UFO finally came. Here, it's like there's an intense 5 minutes, like eight episodes worth of foreshadowing Jewish mythology shoved down a 5 minutes worth of audience throat.
Uh-huh.
Is that the payoff, or is that to set us up so we can get, like, I don't know, like, is like there going to be a burning bush that distracts Varga at the right moment, and he gets ran over by
a car that's flying through the air.
That's shaped like that's got a ram on the hood because it's supposed to understood that that's a scapegoat and it's carrying away the sins of the Stussy brothers. Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
I don't know. It could be, maybe.
I don't know.
As soon as I get done with this, I'm going to post it on Reddit and see what they think.
I am super interested in seeing how the confession plays in the next two episodes.
Well, that's what now, a cliffhanger. What a great
right,
cliffhanger.
It sets you on a trajectory where now you just have the clash. I mean, all the pieces are there. Yep. Everybody knows everything. It's time to just go to war. And that's kind of what I'm the most excited about, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Does Emmett make it out alive? Does Nikki make it out? Is Nikki already dead? Like, where do her and Wrench go into this? I also thought the other thing I want to talk about is there. First of all, even up to last week, I was still getting feedback taking issue with is Nikki genuinely love Rey? That's forever put to bed.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, even in the weird afterlife, she professes like she clearly loves Rey.
I kind of thought it was before this, but yeah,
I did
this
too.
This is the nail
and the Nikki being a soulless carpet bagging. You know, gold digging monster.
Yeah.
It is improbable that a woman that capable and hot would shack up with a parole officer. But I don't, you know, that's the thing is like, you know, you can invent a lot of things in a relationship that, like, you know, maybe she has been ill used by men all her life and, you know, Rey is somewhat noble and respectable and has treated her the kind of like, who knows? Like,
or maybe it started as just a.
Maybe she was doing some kind of bridge based grifting con and she fell.
Right.
She caught
fell
feelings.
For him eventually. Yeah. It happens.
But I don't know, that stuff is like, with only two episodes to go, man, it's going to be an insane final two episodes. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of stuff to roll up and,
yeah.
It's going to be fun. The last thing I want to talk about is the significance of Gloria signing the divorce papers.
Okay.
When I first saw it and she was signing it and she was putting it to, so I'm like, why are you doing this, man? Your husband's gay. Mm-hmm. Like, this is over. Just sign the paperwork and get it all over with. And then she ends up doing that, but she's interrupted by Stussy's confession. What are they trying to suggest here with Gloria? She's burgling the divorce papers. She's just making a burgle of it.
Yeah.
It's getting burgled.
I don't know that it's really anything. Like, yeah. I think those papers are going to go out eventually.
The other thing that happened at the end of the episode is we've been talking about, like, who is right? Was Rey taken advantage of by his older brother?
He does seem to admit it here,
yes.
But he's in some kind of, like, alcoholic haze.
Yeah,
he's
drank,
like,
a fifth of whatever that stuff was. Or
does he even accurately remember it?
Yeah.
It's tough to say, but he does seem to admit that he has feelings, certainly, that he feels like he took advantage of Rey.
Right. Yeah, and he's a first-hand account, and, like, you know, maybe it's regret, maybe it's because it's maybe it's the alcohol, but, like, you know, I'm a kind of a believer in you know, in vino veritas, or drunken words or sober thoughts. So I don't, maybe there is a little something to that. There is a lot of guilt,
yeah.
And... you know, if you take the Esau Jacob thing, there is a good guy and a bad guy in that relationship, and
it's true.
You know, Emmett seems like he is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all I had to talk about. Before we get to feedback, I want to encourage you to check out our club offerings at club.baldmove.com. It's a great way to support the podcast. And if you like Fargo, you should know that the only reason we're able to do it, I mean, we're rolling three deep. And Fargo is certainly not the most popular as far as in terms of sheer traffic, and certainly not in terms of advertisements of the offering. The only reason we're doing it is because we have the luxury of being able to do this on a full-time basis. We have the time to do this much breadth of coverage. So if you enjoy Fargo, it would behoove you, and you want us to keep doing smaller shows like it, it'd behoove you to support us at club.baldmove.com. And you get some cool stuff as well. You get a lot of features you can check out at that site. But we're including a free sample of one of our monthly offerings called Quip, or Quit Your Pitchin', where Jim and I randomly generate fictitious titles for TV shows or movies sometimes, and then we take turns pitching what we think they would be about. What do we do? Did we go with Dame Furry?
Yeah, this one we're going to include is Dame Furry.
This is a pitch where I think Dame Judi Dench is outed as a furry advocate.
Uh-huh.
And can she change the public's mind about fur-on-fur sex? and elderly people banging. Can she? I don't know. But we give it our best pitch. You can preview that content at the tail end of this episode. And if you like to see more of that's come, we got a whole episode of them. We do that every month along with a lot of other bonus content and ad-free feeds. And you can get it all at club.baldmove.com. And if you want to listen to this particular whole episode, guess what? You can get a free 30-day trial just by signing up. So check it out. Test, kick the tires. See if you like it. club.baldmove.com. Let us go to feedback. Eric N. from Great View, Washington. You can send feedback into fargo@baldmove.com, by the way. I asked last week what that thing that Moe's badge is on. He says the object Moe's badge on is called a citation holder. It's intended to hold the officer's badge as well as ribbons that represent various awards the officer has earned. They're usually made by the makers of firearm holsters such as DeSantis. And he sent me a link to one where I could buy for $5. There are more common East Coast police departments like New York Police Department. I'll attach a photo of the NYPD officer wearing one. As far as which awards Moe is wearing without knowing, one, is Holly accurately following the uniform regulations of the department Moe is heading? And two, seeing that department's uniform manual, it would be hard to tell since departments can make up their own awards, although some states have standardized valor awards that can be awarded to any serving officer in the state. Now, he sent me a link of a New York City police department that has like seven of these things above his badge. And it looks like, and I also saw that on the site that you could get like a single citation, a two-bar citation, a three. You can get like different sizes. And I wonder if Holly's trying to get at something that Mo has got a very large citation holder to only hold like one citation. Am I supposed to like understand that this guy is a bit of a showboat? Like, he talks his big talk about his time out in the desert and what a military guy is, and then he comes back in civilian life, and he's, like, all ready to get a bunch of decorations and stuff, but he's all hat and no cattle, as they say in Texas.
Maybe. I mean, or maybe he's just a very optimistic guy.
Yeah, he's ambitious. Like, I'm going to fill this thing with commendations by the time I'm done.
But, he seems like the former.
Yeah, to me, he's a little bit of a blow. He seems like an idiot blowhard.
He does, yeah.
But I wonder if that's just a sly allusion to that. Chris from North Bend, Washington. I went to the season really excited since I was both a fan of Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Carrie Coon. However, while Winstead has impressed me and been fun to watch, I have to say that Coon was miscast. The character she plays or the way she's playing it seems really out of place on Fargo. And it does hurt me to say so since I, like you, Aaron, I'm a fan of hers. And she is crushing it on The Leftovers. But sadly, Gloria shares most of the same character attributes as Nora. And I mean attributes. I'm not saying they're the same person. She's essentially playing a character with the same Nora melancholy, obsessive-compulsive behavior, with an underlying mean temperament who never, ever smiles. It's Fargo, for heaven's sake. Try some comedy. Playing a character so detached isn't working for me. Maybe she didn't get much to work with. The police situation is essentially the same as season one, with her trying to solve the case while her less intelligent police boss throws up roadblocks as much as he can, so she seeks help from another cop outside her jurisdiction, a la Colin Hanks. I don't feel like I know Gloria any better now than I did in the first episode. She appears to be the only main character without an arc in the show, which is rather disappointing. And she wants to know, and he wants to know if we think she's miscast, or is this the fault of the writers, or what? We talked about this a bit.
I can't recall a line that she has said that would leave any opportunity for comedy. So miscast is maybe not where I would go. Mm-hmm. I think that character has been written.
I think some of the stuff she said to Mo is pretty dry. You know.
I suppose so, but yeah, I don't know. That's a tough thing. Maybe I have a little bit of Coon bias here because I like her so much and I think she's a really great actress.
I do think the first half of the season, even though that LA episode is kind of a showcase for her, I really was kind of feeling lukewarm on her portrayal of Gloria. Not her portrayal, but the character of Gloria Burgle herself.
And you do have a little bit of like a, you know, Abbott and Costello sort of thing happening with Gloria and Winnie, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you want Winnie to be the kind of bubblier, a little bit more silly at times of the two cops, and Gloria keeps things on track.
Right.
So maybe they, you know, they were planning on doing that and they were setting it up and Gloria needed to be this person, but.
And it could be that they're just, a lot of the stuff is backloaded into the second, the last two episodes.
Maybe.
We're going to look back and appreciate her arc over time.
They do clearly seem to be wanting to still do something with her, right?
Yes.
Because to me, that's what the whole divorce thing indicates, is there's more to this than just Gloria being a cop.
And as much as I like Carrie Coon, casting her is not instant magic. Like,
yeah.
Gone Girl, she plays Ben Affleck's sister, and she's just kind of Ben Affleck's sister.
Okay.
She has a great job of portraying Ben Affleck's sister, but it's not like you walked away from Gone Girl like, oh my God, Academy Award for Ben Affleck's sister.
Right.
You know, she's really good, but that doesn't mean that everything she's in is going to be amazing. Like, Anthony Hopkins is really fucking good. I bet Transformers is going to be a turd this summer. You know, sometimes he just cash checks. So, that's not to say that Fargo is the Transformers, or this is not a prestige or something interesting, but I don't know. Like I said, that's the best and worst case scenario. Best case scenario is next two episodes are going to be amazing, or we're going to get right away why all this stuff. And you think about there's a lot of this character that's iceberg, right? Like, what's up with the technology? What's up with the fact that her family's falling apart? What's up with the fact that her job's falling apart? Like, that stuff has all been developed, but nothing has come of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that it's just there is no more there, but it could be that there's a lot more there. But who knows?
Yeah,
I'm glad she's working.
See.
Because I feel like there was an interview with her and Alan Sepinwall where she's saying that not only has she got no new projects coming, but she's not even looking right now.
Really?
But she's turned down a lot of stuff because there's a lot of, like, you know, cop type stuff and procedurals, and she's like looking for the, you know.
Yeah, fuck that.
If you've been on The Leftovers, like, what?
That's where TV stars go to die.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to put you on CSI Pittsburgh.
She's like, I don't want to commit to, like, 8 years of my life to something. So
no.
She's, so, but I'm getting at is, like, we might be going into a Carrie Coon drought.
Ah, that
so
sucks.
So we should drink up Fargo and The Leftovers like Coon camels.
Uh-huh.
And store it in our humps, because we might be a while before we get to the other side of this Carrie desert we're going through. Spags from Milwaukee. You keep referring to Gloria Bergel's effect on technology and it not working around her, but I think it's more specific than that. It's technology that detects if someone is there, such as automatic door sensors, automatic faucets, power towel dispensers, etc.
Mm.
I think this plays in well with her robot story, the divorcee story, and the other allusions to something that can be in two states at once, both here and not here, existing and not. Not sure what they're speaking to, but it's amusing how Gloria is both here and not, as shown by Vargas finding her and yet not existing at all online. So I think that's a good piece of, like, cautionary analysis, that, like, we're going down to, like, oh, technology doesn't work around her, and yet they are trying to show her as Schrodinger's cop.
But there's a phone. Like, her phone never works.
Mm, that's true.
That's not designed to detect
people.
People.
No. It's designed to detach people from.
She doesn't have a Facebook
relationships
account. I mean, that's not.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it sort of holds up, but not really.
All right. Well, I thought you had a good point, Spags. Jim's just shitting all over it, but
sorry.
I had your back.
Shitting on it with facts. What can I do?
It's Jim Jones. I shit. That's on your business card, right? I shit facts.
Yeah.
Mara R. from L.A. For some reason, I get the feeling that YouTube, especially Aaron, might not like this episode because of the supernatural factor. Taste it. I loved it. What do you think? I've learned to stop worrying and love the fucking Fishnado. But for me, this was one of the best of the season, or at least the first half. I hope you feel the same. I hate to tell you, but Fargo's done in two episodes. This is not a 13-episode season.
No.
So we are in the back half already. She might be in the first half of the episode, though. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
I do love it. I do feel the same, Mara. I think the entirety of the first half, especially with what came before the first commercial break, could be its own short horror film.
Mm.
The lighting in particular made it appear as though we were watching this in a black and white, which gave an extra chilly vibe that I quite dug. Added the bowling alley scenes with its outerworldly neons and pastels, and the whole thing becomes magical in the most delightful way. This season obviously has relied heavily on the Big Lebowski references, so I hope that means we can set fire to the burn after reading ending.
I feel like I have Lebowski bias, too. Where I see more Lebowski references, therefore I think there are more. When in actuality, they're probably about the same amount.
Yeah,
for each.
I don't. This seems like every season of Fargo seems like it's leaned on two or three movies,
like,
and
pillars,
this does feel like it's very A Serious Man and Big Lebowski heavy. Mm. That's not to say they don't reference Inside Llewyn Davis or My Brother Where Art Thou or, you know, a Simple Plan, because I think the Volkswagen was from a Simple Plan. That's what the weird ass private investigator dude drove around.
I mean, I think also in The Big Lebowski, the private investigator drove one of those. So
right,
yeah.
But yeah, I still think they're with all the mistaken identity and just the unfathomable pinheadedry that we still could get a Burn After Reading ending. Imagine like, because you introduce this outside agency, the U.S. Marshals, in this episode. And I could see, like, the U.S. Marshals reviewing this case of, like, all these missing cons, and they're died, and there's a parole officer involved, and they're like, what the hell did we learn from any of this? In, like, some D.C. U.S. Marshals Bureau office, and they're like, fuck if I know, and then there you go. I did like the fun. It's like, does your patch say U.S.? It's like, because we just got done doing The Fugitive,
right.
This guy's just, like, channeling, you know, U.S. Marshal Sam, what's his face? Gerard. There's a little bit of Sam Gerard in him. Maybe that's how the Marshals are wired. Raylan was kind of ornery too. Noel from Dallas. Anyway, wanted to comment on something that Aaron said about not really understanding Ray and Emmett's petty rivalry leading to one of their deaths. As someone with three brothers, I can fully comprehend two siblings that have some sort of bitter rivalry. I'm the second of four brothers, and I've always had disputes with my older brother. It doesn't happen anywhere near as much as when we were younger. I'm 29, he's 31, but there's still a bit of tension sometimes. It never got to the point where we were sabotaging each other's lives, but we did get in a couple of fist fights. So I could see people like Emmett and Ray giving their circumstances, taking their rivalry to another level.
I've got a mission for you. Go into your brother's house, change all of his paintings and all of his wall art to stamps.
To stamps?
And see if he understands. But
see, it's not good enough. I'd have to do something deeply psychological to him.
Put a mustache on him.
A mustache.
That's
on
deeply
him?
Psychological. That's someone snuck in and put a mustache on you with spirit gum and everything.
Yeah, I do think it's sad because like brothers and sisters are a special relationship because they're great touchstones for your own person, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like you have very similar experiences in your life,
and not only that, but like. One of the things I like to do with my sister, because my brother and I don't speak anymore, but what I like to do with my sister is like we talk about old times and then I get her perspective of the event that happened.
Right.
And it either gives me a new perspective on it or validates my own. And there's no one else like your parents are never going to have that like same memory of, you know, who you were and what was happening.
Removed.
And but your brother and sister, they are your peers and contemporaries.
Yeah.
They're the soldiers that fought in the war with you. And if you lose that, and I've lost that with my brother and it's pretty painful, but, you know, with you murdering accidentally your brother, I can see how it sends you into this like telltale heart kind of, it's a hand reaching from the grave kind of that thing. That's the other, man, I got so caught up in Judaism that I also really liked Emmett when he grabs the secretary, Madeline, by the arm. And she's like, you're hurting me. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he just completely changes his affect. That's so, so Minnesota.
Yeah.
Anthony LD. This week's episode of Fargo might be my favorite of season three. One thing that was especially appreciated was the way that Nikki flashed back to her last conversation with Ray. The audio of that conversation overlaying a close-up of her face I thought worked brilliantly. It portrays well how the human mind works through shock. Nikki really doesn't have time to process the proof of Ray's death while she's fleeing for her life. Mm-hmm. Her mind would be focused on survival. But when she does have a moment to process it, sound bites of the last conversation rings through her head. The scene reveals only snippets of the conversation, suggesting that she doesn't have total recall, because very few people do. However, it supports, in my opinion, that she did have at least some feelings for Ray. She wasn't just pretending to love him. Also, I was happy to see Noah Hawley avoid the cliche of dream flashbacks. Much of my PhD was a study of human memory. One thing that dreams do not do is replay memories. Dreams might use remembered images to create new narratives, and dreams can process memories abstractly, but the human mind doesn't flashback while dreaming. Filmmakers make this mistake all the time, which is a convenient way to tell a story, but it bothers those of us who know how memories work.
Hmm. Yeah, good point. I can't recall ever having a dream that was just essentially a flashback of a memory.
Yeah, like he actually asked us if we would talk about that a little bit, but like I don't dream very often, but like I entirely agree. Like I'll have a very vivid memory of a day I had in high school, but it's me as a 40-year-old man struggling like, why did I not complete a credit hour? Why am I here? why am I putting up with this bullshit? I'm an adult and I'm, you know, have to ask for permission to use the bathroom. Like, it's always that. It's not me reliving that day, you know,
yeah.
or like flashing back. It's always, you know, this situation and this person, but with my current understanding of it.
I had never thought about it until just now when he said that. But yeah, literally never had a flashback dream.
But that's so fucking cliche.
Totally, yeah.
You know, and like, you know, I kind of thought when we saw Ray sleeping that we might be treated to something like that, but then we find out that he palmed the pills.
Yeah.
So, all right. How did he sneak past Mimo?
That's a good question, too. I don't know.
The other thing I'm worried about
is... The same way Nikki snuck in, I guess.
It seems like...
I think she's not dead.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if maybe Mimo's just not on the ball as we think he is.
Too busy dancing.
Too busy dancing and listening to music.
Yeah.
The other thing, it seems like Emmett is not too super careful about looking at what he's signing because he bought a mall that he didn't know he owned.
Yeah.
Why hasn't Varga just gotten power of attorney over this fool and gotten rid of him?
He might need him as a cover. I mean, he might want him as the front man for this whole thing so he can disappear if things go wrong.
Or he can take the fall when the boom levels drops on him.
Yeah.
Do you think Varga's getting away this episode, this season?
I'm trying to determine whether or not I think Varga is a real person at this point.
Jesus Christ.
You've
not sunk that low, have you?
Well, I mean, I would have said before this episode that Ray Weiss's character was a real person, and they've totally turned that on its head. I don't think he's a real flesh and blood person.
Mm.
He might be able to.
I mean, you're right.
Appear to these people as real flesh and blood, but I don't think he is actually like a human being.
They've opened a lot of these nebulous doors.
Yeah, and he felt like the, you know, the benign version of that spiritual supernatural being. So maybe Varga is the malevolent one.
Yeah.
He's the evil one.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
Kind of counterpart. I don't know. Yeah, I don't either.
They've certainly explored with, like, you know, Lorne Malvo's character in the first season,
right.
like, the idea of a supernatural killing force that's, but still flesh and blood, you can kill him.
Yeah.
Varga being, like... I don't know. There's also some, like, the other thing that I didn't mention in my Jewish research is, do you remember I talked about when we're talking about the name Varga, how there's like a Slavic or Hungarian etymology that means shoemaker?
Yeah.
One of the canonical careers of the wandering Jew was a cobbler or a shoemaker.
Okay.
So yeah. like when you that just triggered the memory when you said that they could be like different sides of the same supernatural coin,
mm-hmm.
like the benevolent supernatural and the evil. Like I wonder if there is some kind of mirror image or some kind of balance that this wandering Jew is trying to bring to the force by eliminating Varga.
I don't know. I mean, I'm really kind of anticipating some kind of turn like that.
Yeah.
But
I'm ready for it this time.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
no way Noah Hall is going to knock me on. I might not like it, but I'm not going to not like it because I don't see it coming. He's not going to knock me on my rational ass this time. I'm ready for him. I'm the fish, like unless the final episode is a wandering Jew piloting a UFO in the middle of a fishnado, mm-hmm. I think I'll be fine.
Nice.
While two 737s collide over Fargo, that might not be prepared for that.
You couldn't handle that.
That's my weekend meditation. I'm just going to think about that possibility until
you become one with it,
and then I'll be disappointed when it's just this was the weird episode.
Yeah.
This is going to be a conventional resolution.
That
would
be the
drama.
Real unfortunate twist is if you end up hoping
yeah.
for something like that never comes.
And I tell you what, man, like I said, this Kabbalah shit is deep.
Yeah.
It's really like, you know, Warhammer 40K kind of really deep.
Two mythologies
yeah.
I'm not interested in.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's something you can spend a lot of time on Wikipedia reading.
Oh, I bet.
Okay, that's all we got for feedback for the week. Again, you can email us to fargo@baldmove.com. Also, the forum community at forums.baldmove.com is ready to welcome you with open arms if you'd like to discuss the episodes there. If you'd like to follow us and stay up on the latest and greatest of what we're doing, of course, baldmove.com. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/baldmove and @baldmove for Instagram and Twitter. That's it for this week. We'll be back for the final two episodes next week. Well, the penultimate episode next week. They're not going to do a double episode.
Are we sure?
I didn't mean to imply that. But we'll be back for whatever episode there is next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye-bye.